The Ian Jessup Show.
With his investigative work, our next guest always separates fact from the fiction we are fed so regularly by governments. And to quote a trite phrase from Star Trek, he boldly goes where no man has gone before. Joining us is Norm Farrell, the author of the blog Insights. Norm, how are you?
Very good. Now, great to be with you.
When you compared softwood lumber exports under the NDP to exports under the BC Liberals for the same time period, 9 years, I was surprised to read on your blog there was a drop of $46 billion. Now, that's an astounding amount.
It surprised me, frankly. We've been looking at numbers because the government likes to spin out a story that the 90s were a time of desperate days when people were leaving the province and job creation had stalled. And we've talked previously about, actually, there was more population growth in the 90s, there was more job growth in the 90s, and so on.
Yeah.
But we've also tracked the change in log exports, and we've seen a huge increase in log exports, where I think comparing the last 4 years of Christy Clark's premiership, the industry has doubled its export of raw logs. If you compare that to the period of time that the NDP was in power, it's up by 500% now. So I decided to have a look at softwood lumber exports, and I was assuming that we would be down somewhat since the industry has converted to an export of raw logs as opposed to finished lumber. And I determined that the quantity of exports was actually somewhat equivalent in 9 years of NDP rule. It was a little over 200 and, well, actually, we start to throw around numbers, and it gets a little bit meaningless, but let's say that the recent exports of lumber have been somewhat equivalent to the similar period in the 90s. And what really shocked me was to then look at the values and determine that during the nine-year period starting in 93, we exported $88 billion worth of softwood lumber. In the most recent nine-year period, we've exported $42 billion. So it's a massive change in the value that we've received for the lumber that has been exported.
Norm, is there a reason behind that? Obviously, well, there is. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah. We're recovering a much lower unit cost for each cubic meter of finished lumber that's being exported, whereas previously it was at $364. In the last 9 years, it's been at under $200. And so I then went on to do a comparison with National Resources Canada reports on the market value of lumber in North America. And I find that the amounts that British Columbia has been getting has changed more dramatically than one would expect when reading the North American market price information. We should expect that our value of lumber exports is going to track with the market price. What I've found, it's actually diverged from the market price, and so we're getting a smaller quantity being declared as the value of our exports compared to what we would expect given the market price.
I was quite shocked because in following politics over the decades, one of the arguments that we always hear from politicians, particularly when elections roll around, is that we've got to stop exporting raw logs and add value to the lumber in British Columbia. It is a refrain that has been made for many, many years, and to hear you say that raw log exports under the Liberals have gone up 500% is in itself quite astounding. And is there a reason for exporting raw logs?
Well, I think, the industry itself has changed. It's fairly easy to consider the fact that harvesting a tree in the forest and trucking it down to Tidewater, putting it on a ship bound for China or elsewhere, is a relatively low capital kind of situation. It's low risk economically as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a quick turnaround in the business. If you and I wanted to start up a logging company, and if we could acquire cutting rights, we could be in business within less than a year with a relatively small sum of money. And if we wanted to set up a sawmill, that would be entirely different. The investment in mills, the investment that's required is far higher. As well, you have to have a permanent location. You have to then find trained staff that are going to work there. We've got to be cognizant of all the environmental rules, the zoning rules, and so on. So it's a somewhat difficult task to set up a sawmill, and that I think is one of the great detractions. It's nice and easy and highly profitable to take high quality logs and put them on the ships and send them out, and you're finished until you bank the money. But if you're running a sawmill, it's a much more complex arrangement. And the people that are making decisions in the forest industry are far rather make the choice that's going to result in rapid profitability, and not to make the choice that's going to commit them to a long-term investment.
You know, one of the things that I think has been lost in the government's obsession with liquefied natural gas, the discussion that has been going on for a number of years, is that there's has been very little discussion over the years on the state of BC's forest industry. And I mean, BC's forest industry used to employ tens of thousands of people, and I realize it's changed over the years, but forestry rarely gets discussed anymore, does it?
That's exactly true, and you see it all over the province. I know that I grew up pretty close to the forest industry with family involved in it and worked in it myself when I was a young person. And
you're still young, Norm.
Not exactly. Anyways, the forest industry still contributes a substantial sum to the economy, but we see a continuing decline in the value of finished goods that are being sold, and as I say, this conversion to harvesting the forests and then shipping them overseas for somebody else to look after. And at this point, we're still largely fulfilling our domestic needs, but there will come a day when we're going to be importing finished lumber and selling that in British Columbia to build our own homes. And I think it's a incorrect strategy of government that we should be encouraging doing all we can to maximize the value added aspects of the forest industry.
You know, Norm, I was just as you were talking, I just grabbed a sheet in front of me that it was from this year's budget, and it's the government estimates and that natural gas royalties will be $344 million this year, and they estimate that royalties revenue from forests will be $835 million, so more than twice the amount from natural gas royalties. But the obsession is still with liquefied natural gas.
Yeah, what's interesting, too, that I examined in some recent work was that the volume of gas produced in British Columbia has been growing in recent years, but the government revenues from gas has not grown significantly. So we're getting less out of the gas industry. There's, if you look at the job creation situation, I think Rich Coleman was talking yesterday about 100,000 jobs being created by the LNG industry, but it simply doesn't stand up to any scrutiny. It's, they absolutely know that it's a fantastical claim that can't be backed by fact.
Is he still talking about 100,000 jobs?
Yesterday he did, and one of my readers did a calculation based on some statements that Coleman made regarding the spin-off employment that one gets from some of these mega projects, and he calculated based on Coleman's numbers that when Coleman was talking about the living accommodations, it turns out that according to Coleman's stats on food services, that each person is eating 12 meals a day during
I remember that because he said some company would be serving 45,000 meals a day. So you figure if you're serving 45, that's 3 meals a day. That's 15,000 people. There aren't going to be 15,000 people working there.
No, of course. But all of those are ghosts.
Yeah, it's crazy. Let's go to the phones and bring in Ian. Hi, Ian.
Hi, Ian. Thank you. You guys are both making a lot of sense,
I never make sense, Ian. It's always Norm.
Sense if you spell it with a C.
With a C. There we go. I guess the question is why are we? We've been saying this for years. Why are we not doing something about it? I think the answer is probably simple. A tremendous amount of capital is required. If we're going to do a value add with our lumber and our timber, it's got to be a highly finished product, because unless we produce something that's highly finished, highly milled, and takes advantage of our first world design and engineering skills, there's no way we'll be able to compete with cheaper labor once the logs are shipped overseas. They'll take them in China or wherever, Korea or Vietnam, and they'll add value there much more cheaply than we can. So in order to do it, we need to really beat them to the punch with highly skilled products, like highly skilled prefab homes, and that requires a lot of capital. And I don't think we're able to attract the kind of capital we need to commit to what I think would be a long-term enterprise. And I think they're going to want governments that are going to be stable and give them commitments to prices and products and things like that. And I think that's the problem, and I just don't think it's likely to change.
Well, I would suggest that we have a pool of capital that could be better employed for the development of British Columbia industry, and that's through the pension plans that we have in place. There's over $115 billion that's invested in such things as tobacco companies and arms dealers and fossil fuel companies and so on. And if we took 10% of the pension funds that are administered in British Columbia and applied those to British Columbia industry, we could have a win in two different ways.
Well, yes. Norm, that makes sense, but Norm, don't you think we need a visionary to say, okay, well, we can say we've now got the capital from our pension funds, but we need someone to then come along and actually put it all together to, you know, design the plants, invent the products, come up with something new that's compelling, and we need, you know, free enterprisers and inventors and people that want to really come up with some ideas that are compelling. I think that's what
you're absolutely correct, and that's exactly what we've not done with respect to the liquid natural gas proposals. You know, we've been heading off on a policy roadway that is not being examined by people that are objective, and there's no kind of peer review of economists that are looking at these things. All of the negotiations for what amounts to billions of dollars worth of future subsidies have been conducted by people who are not experts and done behind closed doors.
Right.
Yeah. Ian, can you hang on? I've got to take a commercial break. You asked some good questions. Can you hang on?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, great. Norm Farrell is our guest. He's the author of the blog Insights. We'll take a break and come back. Welcome back. Norm Farrell is our guest. He's the author of the blog Insights, and Ian has another question. Ian, go ahead.
Well, I think I called in last time Norm was on, and we talked about the fact that it's a buyer's market for natural gas, and then I was doing a bit more reading about it, and I guess in kind of a mild defense of the government, these kinds of projects, in order to get them going and in place, require the seller, meaning the province, to really guarantee long, this is a long process, and they're going to sink a lot of capital into it, and there has to be a long kind of term deal in place to make the extraction of LNG, you know, worthwhile. And so, yeah, so I think what Norm is saying, we've sort of given it away cheaply, and just haven't done a good job in how we sort of vetted the project. Is that what you're saying?
Well, Australia was able to extract a number of different conditions that we have not been able to acquire.
Not been able to do, right.
And that refers to hiring local for jobs, buying local for materials, doing installations of equipment that's manufactured locally. It's almost a certainty that we will be employing a large group of foreign workers to import foreign manufactured machinery and install it in the province. And so we'll be employing a number of installers for a rather short length of time, but these highly automated facilities ultimately don't take much. They don't provide much permanent employment.
Right.
One of the problems that I think is that there's been these fantastical claims made by government for the benefits that are going to arise and from LNG, and they've made similar kinds of claims about forestry as well. I looked 4 years ago when they were talking about the exponential growth of lumber exports from British Columbia, and Steve Thompson, the minister, said that we were seeing staggering growth in the amounts of wood we export. And so they make these claims, which are purely political, but the trouble is that they make them so frequently that they start to believe them and they act upon them. If they ever stood back and said, let's bring on a commission of experts to actually examine the policy that we've committed ourselves to and determine whether it's an appropriate one or not, I think they would be shocked.
Yeah. By the time we get that all figured out, we're ready to change government.
I won't be around to see how it comes out.
Yeah, thank you, Ian.
Okay,
appreciate
Ian.
It. Norm, in greasing the political hand that feeds the political agenda, you've compiled a list of resource companies who have heavily invested in donating to the BC Liberals. Tell us about that.
Well, this is kind of an underlying issue that I think is behind a lot of the poor decision-making that goes on. So I started going through the Elections BC reports on political contributions and just trying to pull out resource companies and the individuals that are the key players in the resource companies. And at this point, I've calculated over $15 billion in contributions to the Liberal Party.
$15 million, you mean?
$15 million of contributions to the Liberal Party.
Yeah.
And I haven't completed my examination, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if it rises up over $20 million. And I think we're in a situation where you have to think that it's a pay-to-play kind of arrangement, that if you want to do business in this province, particularly in the forest industry, the mining or gas industry, the first thing you have to do is gain political support, and that requires financial contributions.
Norm, you know what surprised me is that when you broke it down into oil and gas, mining and forestry, the mining companies gave more than anyone else.
Actually, you know,
did I read that right?
Going through and looking at forestry, the thing that I showed you earlier today, I've updated a little bit from there. And
What
surprises me is just the extent of money they're collecting out of the forest industry. And even, you know, the unit amounts, the typical average contribution is lower, but they're bringing in, I'm ignoring things under $2,000 and just looking at the larger contributions. And it really does, I think it's a situation that is not healthy. When if you want to do business with in this province, apparently you have to get your checkbook out and pay the politicians some money. And I think that gets us the wrong kinds of things happening in the economy. And it's something that we could easily resolve by simply doing is what Alberta has done, and that's to remove the contributions of corporations and unions from the political process.
Norm, got to run, and we'll talk to you again. You're in Victoria on August 13th, and you'll be in studio, so we'll look forward to meeting you then.
Great, okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Norm.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Norm Farrell, and we'll have a chat with him in a couple of weeks. Terry